I'm Dan Rodericks, and you're listening to Midday. Urban farming has gained momentum in recent years, with vegetable gardens popping up in city parks, at the White House, and here in Baltimore around City Hall. Novella Carpenter was ahead of the curve. In 2003, she began an incongruous life as an urban farmer when she moved to inner city Oakland, California. Her days became overwhelmed with tasks such as battling slugs, wrangling turkeys, dumpster diving, and raising pigs three times her size. Novella Carpenter is at the forefront of urban farming, a sect within the sustainable food movement, and she details her adventures in her book, Farm City. She's in Baltimore today visiting Midday, and we're going to talk to her about how she developed a farm in a city neighborhood. That's next on Midday, after the news. And welcome to the Farm Hour here on Midday. Hello, everybody. Dan Rodericks again. Thank you for joining us. Most people would not look at an abandoned, garbage-filled lot on a dead-end street and think, farm. But Novella Carpenter did just that when she moved from Seattle to Oakland, California, and then she began what she called her rural-urban experiments. Her charming book, Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer, was one of the New York Times' top 10 books of 2009 and has recently been released in paperback. In this book, Ms. Carpenter talks about her experiences developing a farm in the rough urban setting of Oakland while the neighbors looked on in bewilderment, and apparently they still do 10 years later. As she transformed the abandoned lot behind her apartment, she also transformed her life, devoting the majority of her time to raising vegetables and animals and learning what it means to live off the land. 10 years ago, and her neighbors still think she's crazy for doing this. Novella Carpenter is in Baltimore today for a talk tonight at the Enoch Pratt Free Library, and we're fortunate to have the pleasure of her company during this hour of Midday. Novella Carpenter, nice to meet you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Have you ever been to Baltimore?
I haven't. But I've heard it's similar to Oakland. It's kind of like the Oakland of the East Coast.
Somebody has described it
as that? Somebody told me that.
Isn't it Oakland that Gertrude Stein said there's no there?
They always say that, but it's she wasn't really talking about that.
She wasn't. Mm-hmm. No, she was talking about something else.
Something else. She wouldn't talk smack about Oakland.
Well, there's a here, and there's a lot of urban farming going on here. I don't know if anyone told you that.
People have told me. I want to see it. I want to see it for sure. And I can't wait to hear more about it.
It's in the city parks. I've seen it on vacant lots taken over around town. I'd love if I had time to take you out this afternoon. Not too far from here, actually, from our studios.
Well, just tell me where it is.
But tell us. I want to hear your I want to hear your story first, and so do our listeners here. This goes back to, well, we could go all the way back to your childhood if you'd like to. I mean, I would like to a little bit. In Idaho, can we start there?
Yeah,
do you
let's
mind?
Start in Idaho.
Because
let's start in Idaho.
You weren't just a city kid. You were in Idaho at one point.
That's true. I actually grew up in rural areas for the most part. My parents were back to the land hippies. So they had been living in Berkeley, California, and Oakland, California. And then they decided to, why not go farm in Idaho? Well, you know, not thinking too much about how snowy and freezing cold it is, and there's rocky soil and all those things. Yeah. And so, you know, they had a go at it, and they definitely grew some food and raised animals and raised us. But then, you know, it was, I think the isolation eventually got to them, at least my mom. And so their experiment kind of didn't work out.
Did they live in the panhandle?
No, they lived in Orfino, Idaho, which
Orfino.
Is on
Orfino.
Yes, the fine Orfino. I think it's population 300 or something.
Wow.
But they, it's kind of like in the midpoint between. It's not really on the panhandle.
But they did some farming.
Yes, they did farming. My father ran cattle for a while. My mom had a milk cow. They raised rabbits and turkeys and had a beautiful vegetable garden. And it was very, you know, when I look at the old photos from back in the day, it was a lovely life. You know, we ate extremely well. and healthy food and all of that stuff.
Were you involved in any of that, growing of the food or taking care of the animals?
I was too young to do any of those things. So I mean, in some ways I think of it as, you know, I only remember the good things about it. And so I was reminded when I moved to a city and I started really doing more farming work, which I always include animal husbandry in that, you know, mm-hmm. raising rabbits and turkeys and those kinds of things and pigs and now goats. But I'm always reminded, you know, like, oh, yeah, I just sort of glossed over. It's sort of the romantic part of it. You know, when you're a kid, everything's like a hazy, golden, lovely memory. And then you're like, oh, my God, I have to muck out this right. goat barn. This is sick.
right. You know? Or if I buy a new shrub or a plant or a tree, this goat might eat it.
Oh, yeah.
When my back is turned.
Oh,
right?
They destroyed my kumquat tree. I wanted to kill him.
Yeah. They'll eat anything. It's really true, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So let me just go over this quickly before we get to Seattle, Washington, mm-hmm. before you get to the state of Washington. Where do you spend most of your life? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up for the most part from ages 6 to 18 in Shelton, Washington, which is a little logging town in the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. But no farming.
No farming. We lived in the city, such as it was. It's population 2,000. but my mom did keep a vegetable garden, and we were, you know, I learned some things from her about strawberries and kind of more gardening type things. And then, you know, I kind of had this, when I moved to Seattle, actually, is when I started doing more farming. Somehow that happened. And I kind of blame this book, The Encyclopedia of Country Living, which is this amazing sort of back to the land Bible. And I remember laughing in my office in downtown Seattle, looking at pictures of, things about like how to raise goats and turkeys. And then I started to kind of, you know, pay more attention and say, you know, I could do this. I have a huge backyard. Why not start beekeeping or keeping chickens? And so I was inspired by this book.
You had a boyfriend who was a beekeeper, right?
I had a boyfriend who was liked the idea of being a beekeeper. And so he kind of got me into it.
Did he send away for bees? Did they come in the mail?
No, yeah. Well, sometimes they do come in the mail. We went to it was a very romantic, birthday gift, where we went to a place where they sell bee supplies. And so they got all the gear, the smoker and the veil and the boxes. And then I received the package of bees in the mail. So, in the springtime.
It was very romantic.
It is romantic. Well,
what became of all that?
What? The beekeeping or Bill?
Yeah, did you actually do it?
Both.
The boyfriend and the bees. So.
Oh, no. We still keep bees. And Bill's hilarious because, you know, actually the boxes are really heavy because they're filled with honey and stuff. So I'll make Bill go move stuff around.
So Bill's still in the picture.
He's still in the picture, yes.
And that was how many years ago?
This is about 12 years ago.
Years ago.
Yeah, we've been together for a long time.
Okay. So you're getting a little taste of this, right? Whatever
yeah.
this is.
Yeah.
You're an apiarist.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm like sitting in my office and they're like, hey, there's a swarm. And I have to like ride my bike home to like get the swarm. You know, stuff like that was happening. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, we had a swarm in my backyard. My uh-huh. father called a guy up the road who made honey.
Yeah.
And he came over and captured the swarm.
It's no big deal.
No, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Not to him, it wasn't. We were terrified, of course.
Right, yeah.
We thought we were in a science fiction movie. And this guy shows up and all the bees just follow him into the box.
Yeah.
I mean, they went into the box for him.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It generally is fine.
So then you moved to Oakland, California. Mm. Now, what's behind that decision?
Well, Bill and I were just really sick of the weather in Seattle. It was people always complain about the rain, but it's not that. It's that it's so dark. It's just dark all the time.
Cloudy a lot.
It's like a cloud on your head for 9 months out of the year.
Oh, yeah.
So we did a whole tour of the United States. We took our cat and our van, and we drove around to different cities and tried to see if we could live there.
You didn't go by Baltimore.
No, clearly, because obviously I would have moved here immediately. No, we didn't. For some reason, we missed Baltimore and Philly. But, we went to Austin and Brooklyn, you know, places where people were moving.
Any place in between Austin and Brooklyn?
No, yeah. Well, we went to... we were in Florida, but who was going to
live? Did anything catch your eye other than...
Austin was cool, but it's so in the middle of Texas, you know?
It's pretty much in the middle of Texas.
It is really amazing how in the middle of Texas it is. Where else did we go? We went to... No, that was pretty much it.
Did Oakland emerge as the place?
As the winner? First of all... Oakland had, we had some friends that lived there as well. So they were sort of like, it's really cool here. So we had that. And also because the weather is like perfect there. It is eternal spring. It's, you know, almost always just about 70 degrees and, you know, it's great. Oh, yeah, you're rolling your eyes.
I mean, it sounds nice.
It's great. And yeah. The thing for me, especially as a gardener, was I can grow citrus. I can grow oranges and lemons. And there's just nothing like that. It's just the perfume of their petals. I mean, it's just amazing. And, you know, Oakland had its problems because I don't like to live in a perfect place. I like to live in a place where it's complicated, you know?
A little bit edgy.
A little gritty.
Sketchy.
I prefer that. Mm-hmm. A little sketchy maybe is okay for me. And so Oakland was a perfect fit.
So where in Oakland did you and Bill land? And did you have the bees with you?
No, we didn't have the bees with us. We had to leave them. We had to leave them in Seattle. We thought about it, believe me. We're the kind of people that
you
would
abandoned
put...
your bees.
Yeah, we abandoned the bees. But we came back for them eventually. But yeah, we moved. We lived in a couple of different places when we first got there. We've started living with some anarchist punks who happened to be vegans. And they were kind of horrified that we had been beekeepers and chicken owners. You know, we're really like, you know, but abusing those chickens.
They befriended you
know?
You anyway?
They befriended us anyway, I think, because they needed someone to pay the rent. So we lived there for a while. And then I've decided that we really needed to move closer to like a downtown area where there are people. This was like in this hill, you know, the house on the hill kind of situation. Mm. And so we moved to an area called Ghost Town. And this is where we thrived. Ghost Town is called Ghost Town because there's a lot of different stories about why it's called that. It used to be a big, they used to make caskets. There was two dueling casket factories that were right across the street from each other in this area. So they call it Ghost Town. And then also because it's sort of an abandoned area, you know, it's like lots of abandoned buildings and vacant lots and that kind of thing.
Abandoned homes or
abandoned
homes.
Beautiful old Victorian homes, just shuttered. Nobody knows what's going on.
Did you buy a house?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You rented a place.
Do I have money to buy a house?
I don't know, Novella.
Come on now.
Maybe the bee thing worked out for you. I don't know. Maybe you, you know, sold a lot of honey. I don't know.
Oh, no.
So you rented one of those old houses?
We rented one of the old houses. It's a duplex, so we were the upstairs floor. And when we went to go look at the apartment, they were like, yeah, check it out. Here's this abandoned lot that's right next door. And I'm like, do you guys own the lot? What's the deal? And they're like, we don't know who owns it, but it's probably fine for you to go ahead and do some gardening. You were thinking
about doing some gardening?
Oh, yeah. We were definitely thinking about doing some gardening.
Right.
And I realized it would be a perfect place for bees. It would be the perfect place to have some chickens, that kind of thing.
In Oakland, California.
Yeah, in Oakland,
in Ghost
California.
Town.
In Ghost Town. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess not everyone would think that this
really?
Would be a perfect place for bees or to grow, you know, rutabagas.
Well, it was just so much more space than we had in Seattle. It was like a tenth of an acre. It was a really big lot. And, you know, it's one of those things where I guess I just am I'm a creative thinker. I just thought it seemed like a really, really great place to do it.
We're going to take a break and we'll pick up there. Farm City is the name of Novella Carpenter's book, The Education of an Urban Farmer. She put down stakes in Oakland, California, along with Bill, right?
That's right.
And then you brought the bees back, too. I'm very happy. So there is a happy ending with the bees. All right. More of this story when we get back here on Midday. You're welcome to join us if you're doing some farming in the city. 410-662-8780. The toll-free long-distance number, 866-661-9309. And the Midday email address is midday@wypr.org. If you've read Farm City by Novella Carpenter, you're welcome to call, too. Down on the farm, actually in the middle of Oakland, California, with Novella Carpenter. By the way, Novella Carpenter will be in the Wheeler Auditorium of the Enoch Pratt Free Library tonight at 7 p.m. to talk about her book and her experiences as an urban farmer, her presentation done in partnership with Baltimore Greenworks. So back to the vacant lot. What was the condition of that vacant lot when you first saw it? Was there junk on it? Weeds? And what did
weeds,
it look like?
Weeds, really tall weeds, like waist-high weeds. But just growing in parts of it, because it was actually this giant concrete slab. Yeah. So, but there were weeds and then lots of garbage and tires and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So what did you take control of all that?
Well,
you and Bill?
You know, we started off very slowly. We cut down the weeds. And then we had the soil tested, any exposed soil, just to see, you know, we didn't want really, this is a huge problem with urban farming is that the soil often has lead in it. So we had it tested for lead. And then we just slowly started installing these raised beds, you know, so we would go find wood, pieces of wood that had been abandoned somewhere. And then we would go up to these horse stables and get composted horse manure, which makes really great soil.
Where were the horse farms? Where were those? Was it on a farm or just in the city somewhere?
People actually keep a lot of horses near city limits in the Bay Area. There's like a whole horse community up in the hills. So okay. We would just go up there.
So you did raised beds. This mm-hmm. is all in the first year. And mm-hmm. you didn't do a title search or anything on the vacant lot?
No.
You were worried that the owner was going to show up and say, hey, that corn's mine.
Well, I mean, at that point, it was just sort of, you know, when you just dip a toe in and you're just kind of checking the waters. And if he showed up, who cares? Whatever. I'll just, you know, have to get rid of one of the raised beds. I didn't put that much work into it. But because he never came for years, we kept building and building and building and building until one day he walked in and was like, what is going on in here?
Now, that first year when you had the raised beds and you started working on this project,
mm-hmm.
What did the neighbors think? What neighbors were there and what did they think? What kind of reactions did you get?
Well, I was like typical, like a do-gooder white girl, and I would wander around my neighborhood and knock on the door and tell them, like, I'm going to start a community garden. Do you want to help me? And people would be like, you know what, honey? I buy my food at Safeway. Thank you. And slam the door.
Hmm.
And so I was, and I was sort of, at first, I was kind of disappointed. I was like, oh man, I wanted to engage the community, you know?
Right.
But then I realized, and this is what I've realized over time, is that you just got to do it. You know what I mean? Like, no one's going to help you do the stupid thing that you want to do. If you have a crazy idea, you just have to follow it. So we just kept building and building and building.
Was your thought that if you went out there and just started, that others might see you and then eventually join in? We were hoping this would become a community project.
I was hoping that might happen. Yeah. Right. And it did.
How did you do your first year as a farmer? What did you actually know about all of this? And did you have the equipment you needed? You know, getting started,
mm-hmm.
it intimidates a lot of people because they think,
it does.
I don't really know, and I'm setting up myself up for failure here, and I don't know if I have the time really to devote to this because there's mm-hmm. going to be a lot of weeds that I have to pull, and I don't know if I have a hoe and a rake and enough hose. And you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, it's
huge. There are people who talk themselves out of doing this every year, every spring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I know. I'm just an optimistic person. I didn't know anything about growing food in California at all. I mean, I had lived in Seattle, and when I lived there, we grew vegetables. I mean, I had plowed up my parking strip and had grown fava beans. And so I knew how to garden, but I didn't know how to do it in California. And what I found, it was just add water gardening. I mean, honestly, it is so easy to grow
food there.
Because
you are in California.
Yeah. I mean, it's just perfect weather thing. You know, it's just perfect.
Can I ask you about that? Because a lot of folks around here, they'll plant tomatoes or pepper plants. Mm-hmm. I almost said tomatoes.
You did.
I'm sorry. tomatoes or peppers, some lettuce. And then, mm-hmm. you know, we're always worried about the timing in this part of the country.
Yeah.
And certainly as you go further north. But in California, like tomatoes, for instance.
Well, tomatoes, it's the same thing. Like, I set them out. Generally, it's a little early. Usually, people put them out May 1st. That's when you put your tomatoes out.
Okay, that's sort of similar to
It's very
here.
Similar because we do. Okay. It does eventually get cold. So we have a season, and then it starts raining in around December, January. So you could never, you can't grow tomato. And it, you know,
but just, you have a longer season than we
do
would.
Have a longer season.
So you
season.
Can do plantings in August, September.
Oh, yeah.
For the fall season, right?
Yeah, you can extend for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing that I didn't know how to do was I didn't know how to build a raised bed. I had this, like, you know, Makita screw thing in my hand, and I'm like, I don't even know how to use this thing. So I learned a lot by doing that. And I, you know, I would go find tools at, you know, thrift stores or wherever. So that was how I got that done.
Did Bill help you?
Of course Bill helped me. Bill is an auto mechanic, so he's a very handy man. So he would have lots of, you know, input on in terms of building stuff.
The first year, how did it go generally?
Generally, it went okay. I mean, it was fine. I realized that I needed more space, you know.
I grew some, you wanted to grow more.
Yeah, I grew some basil and some corn, and you know, it was just nothing that exciting. But what I did notice is that people started to look into the garden and, you know, kind of give me the like, yeah, that looks cool. And so then I was, you know, further moved to keep going.
This is in Ghost Town in Oakland, California. Our guest is Novella Carpenter. Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer is her book. It's in paperback now. She'll be appearing at the Enoch Pratt Free Library tonight. 410-662-8780. If you'd like to compare notes on gardening with Novella Carpenter, especially if you're an urban gardener, if you've turned a vacant lot into a community garden, or if you have a garden going in one of the city parks, we'd like to hear from you. Our toll-free long-distance number again, 866-661-9309. Did you have any theft your first year?
Well, I don't know. I never really called it theft because I was squatting on that land anyway, so it was kind of like stealing it myself. But yeah. I don't remember. I don't think so. I don't think people came by to pick stuff. It wasn't as infamous as it is now.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you were pleased the first year. You just wish you had more space.
Yeah, I was sort of like, yeah, you know, I could really expand this.
Mm-hmm. What were you hoping, Novella? Were you hoping that you could actually, you know, supply you and Bill with a good amount of food, put up some fruits and vegetables, freeze them?
I was definitely into the whole idea about being self-sufficient, you know. And I had been taking these classes in permaculture, which is this idea that you can, you know, it's sort of no-till gardening. So it's like you just plant stuff and it works together. And it's this whole like kind of woo-woo idea. And so I was really interested in trying those, you know, experimenting a little bit more with that. And I was lucky I worked at a nursery. I was able to bring home lots of plants, you know, from the sale rack, trees and vines and those kinds of things.
You've looked into urban gardening or the history of it in doing this book here. And, you know, it's kind of a hot thing nowadays. You said you were just in Philadelphia and it's they're urban gardening all over the place, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's everywhere. It's really awesome.
Well,
yeah.
But there was a period of time in this country when there actually was a lot of it going on. I was interested in this story about Detroit, mostly because it gets me to use the name, allows me to use the name Hazen Pingree on the air. He was the mayor of Detroit.
Right, that's
Hazen
right.
Pingree. Tell us about that.
This is all from a book called City Bountiful by Laura Lawson, and she's a historian, and she did a whole book about urban. They didn't call them urban farms back then, but growing food in cities. And Hazen, the story about the Pingree potato patches are amazing. He had gone to Europe, and in Europe, they have mini allotment gardens. It's considered a thing for, it's a perk for people who live in cities like London, where they'll have a space in the city that's devoted to growing food. And he thought that was really cool. And at the time, this is 1893, Detroit was in a huge depression. Actually, the whole country was. We never hear about it. And so his idea was, wow, all these people are unemployed. And they're hungry, and there's all these vacant lots, so let's do it. And this is like, you know, and now Detroit's having sort of the same problem and is having the same reaction. So you sort of see just history eating itself. It's just repeating and repeating. So, I think the urban, you know, people are often like, oh, you're a pioneer. And I'm just like, whatever. This has been going on forever.
It makes so much sense. If you have the space available, you live in a city and you want to use the land, if you have the ambition and you can get access to the land.
Yeah.
There's quite a demand, actually, in Baltimore now for these lots that are available in city parks, but I think they're all used up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And people are moving to rooftops now. Mm-hmm. In Brooklyn, there's an amazing project on a huge rooftop. It's like an acre farm up on the roof.
In Brooklyn, New York?
Well, they started in Brooklyn. They have one in, what is that neighborhood? Greens Point. And then they moved to one in Queens.
No kidding.
Yeah. It's huge.
Now, how big is yours today as we speak, 10 years down the road?
It's, it is still a tenth of an acre. I can't get it any bigger. But I've incorporated more animals into the farm. So at first I started growing vegetables, and then I got the bees, and then I got the chickens. You know, sort of like I had
So you brought the bees from Washington?
Well, happened was, no, I got the bee boxes. My bees in my absence died. Okay, I'm sorry. I know.
So it's not that happy a story.
Well, but we still got their honey in their former home and resurrected it back.
So there's a legacy.
There's a legacy. Thank you. And I still have those hives. Once you buy those boxes, they last forever. Not those kind of hives.
Not those kind of
hives.
I started scratching. Excuse me. I'm sorry. But you Recreated.
And then I started thinking about meat. Mm-hmm. I started to think about how I ate meat, and I had been a vegetarian for years, and then I started eating meat because Michael Pollan told me I could, which is a common thing that happens, where, you know, he's sort of like, if you eat organic grass-fed beef, it's fine. And then I started thinking about animals and raising them, and so I started raising turkeys, this is in 2005, I started raising turkeys.
Let me get this picture, okay? It's a tenth of an acre in Oakland, California, in the place called Ghost Town, where they used to be competing casket makers.
Right.
You're on an abandoned lot that you don't own.
Correct.
You started growing things on raised bed that I assume take up some of the space in that tenth of an acre.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
Are the turkeys?
Yeah, would you just pen?
Well,
you build a pen?
There was a backyard. There was a backyard, too.
Oh, to where you were living.
So for our apartment, there was a backyard. And it actually had a dog run. Like, someone had obviously very large dogs living back there. And so I was like, wow, just, you know, pop up the chicken coop and keep the turkey house and just put everyone back there. So
wouldn't chickens have taken up less space or, you know?
I had chickens.
Quail or guinea hen
or
something?
No, yeah. But those things, quail, it's not worth it. Guinea hens are loud. You got to remember. It was a little bit of a... I mean, let's just say I probably won't raise turkeys again. Partially because they are very curious. They're very gregarious. And they enjoyed, flying out to MLK and walking down a busy street and sort of causing almost near car accidents. So that kind of thing was happening.
Did you chase them?
Yeah, I would chase them, or my neighbors would chase them. Or perfect strangers would show up and say, like, there's your turkey. You know, that kind of thing.
Did you have one turkey?
No, I had three.
You didn't name them, did you?
Of course I named them. Well, one of them disappeared, and then I was left with a couple, and so I named him Harold and Maude.
One of the great movies, by the way.
Really good movie.
What advice did you get, if any, about naming animals you intend to eat?
Well, I was told not to do that by many farmers. And then what happened was my vegan neighbor, Lana, named them. It was sort of to avoid me having the Thanksgiving dinner that I wanted to have.
Can we go back to Martin Luther King Boulevard for a minute?
Yes,
and the
yes.
turkey has escaped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you, what do you have, a leash? What are you doing?
Turkeys are funny. They want to hang out with you. So when I would show up, they'd kind of like, you know, want to hop into my arms and be taken home.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't imagine.
It was pretty cute.
So that didn't last that long? You tried that one year?
Yeah,
one
I did
season?
That 1 year. Actually, I've done turkeys. I did turkeys another. I've done turkeys 3 years in a row. But I've stopped now. I've stopped raising turkeys because of that problem.
Did you get into chickens?
Yep, we did chickens, egg-laying chickens. I have 8 chickens.
Is that a wonderful thing?
I know, I love
they
them.
They give you this little gift every day.
It's like,
right?
It's what they say, it's a pet with benefits.
It most definitely
They're
is.
They're so cute, you totally love them, and then you get eggs, too.
I had chickens for a while.
Really?
Yeah,
what
it was
happened?
Wonderful. A weasel or a fox got them. Mm. Yeah, that's tough. You take a risk there. There are some urban carnivores that will get at your poultry.
Yes, it's horrible.
If you try this.
Oh, yeah.
But they do. For a time, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
They give you an egg. Now, so did you butcher any of the chickens?
No, we hardly ever, we never really raised chickens for meat. Sometimes we would if we had a rooster, though. That's a huge problem with keeping, you know, chickens as well, is that sometimes half the time... With chicks, they'll be roosters, you know?
Now, roosters make noise.
They're so loud.
They get really loud and early in the morning.
Like at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Mm. So even though you're in an urban environment where, you know, car alarms go off and whatnot.
Right.
And there's trucks, the sounds of trucks and cars all the time, right?
Yeah.
Did you get complaints about your rooster?
I never had complaints about my rooster. In fact, my downstairs neighbor, this Vietnamese family, Mr. Nguyen, came out and he was like, I love the sound of the rooster singing in the morning. And then Bill's like, kill that rooster. I can't sleep. And so then I was like, okay.
Novella Carpenter, our guest, Farm City is her book, The Education of an Urban Farmer. Did you name the rooster?
No, I never named him.
Never named the rooster. Here's an email, Novella. This one from John in Baltimore, one of our listeners. I've got a pretty sizable vegetable garden sprouting up in a mostly forgotten city park that shall go unnamed.
Ooh.
I've got pumpkins, lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers, herbs, and previously broccoli. But the deer aren't giving my broccoli a chance. Yeah, deer.
Wow.
Deer, you know, deer
There's
are all
deer
over the place. Yeah, I saw
wow.
a fox in my neighborhood the other day.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to figure out a solution. Do you have any encounter with wild animals? What kind of animals and pests did you have to fend off in Oakland, California?
Yeah, we don't have deer in Oakland, but we do have opossums and raccoons, and they're horrible. The raccoons especially, they're smarter than high schoolers, I think. I mean, they can figure out a way to get into your coop and kill your animals. So mm-hmm. I've had that happen for sure. I've had them kill some of my rabbits before even.
You had many rabbits.
I have rabbits. Yeah, right. I raise meat rabbits.
Rabbits will multiply quickly.
They
but
do.
You had to deal with this possum at one point.
Yeah, right? I actually did have to defend my animals from an opossum attack once. And I kind of have always hated opossums anyway. There's just something about them. They're creepy, right?
Yeah, it's a very strange looking animal.
Yeah, whereas like raccoons are kind of cute and furry.
Yeah.
But this opossum, and so I killed it with my bare hands.
I saw a raccoon in Baltimore City eating spinach tortellini once. Honest to God. Somebody, you know, was in somebody's trash, and he was sitting on the bag, reaching in, pulling out one tortellini at a time, eating it with his little fingers.
Oh, they're classy. They're totally classy.
Very classy. 410-662-8780. A quick call before our first break here. Rebecca in Catonsville, you're on Midday with Novella Carpenter. Hello. Rebecca,
you're taking my call today.
Go right ahead, please.
Well, very exciting things are happening in Catonsville, Maryland, where our Westside Men's Homeless Shelter is located in District 1 of Baltimore County. I'm actually running for Baltimore County Council, but one thing that our campaign is doing is starting a vegetable garden at the homeless shelter right off of Wade Avenue, and if it weren't for these important public-private partnerships, because of the high demands on the resources, as the resources are in more of a demand, there's an increased need to serve the people in our communities. And if it weren't for such organizations as Lazarus Caucus and other good works that are being done by our churches out there and the community members, you know, people wouldn't necessarily get fed, but we're looking at a new approach to make it more sustainable and so that it can change possibly the face of homelessness, whereby this vegetable garden will not only assist in feeding the men, lifting their spirits, but also the hope is that they can sell the surplus back to the community.
It's at Wade Avenue in Catonsville. What's the name of the shelter, Rebecca?
It's the Westside Men's Homeless Shelter.
Are the men themselves engaged in the gardening?
They will be, absolutely. The county is graciously donating 9 cubic yards of compost, and we'll be doing what is called a lasagna style of gardening, and the gentleman there will actually be doing the work and helping.
Hey, thanks for letting me know about that. Maybe I'll come out and check that out. Thank you very much. What is a lasagna style?
Yeah, lasagna style. I know you're getting hungry. You're like, lasagna. No. So what they do, it's developed by a woman named Ruth Stout, and they would put, it's sheet mulching it. So you put down layers of carbonaceous material like newspaper and straw, and then you put the compost over that, and then you just plant right in there. So you never have to till the soil. You don't have to do a rototiller. You know, which
does it work?
Yeah, it totally works. Oh, it's beautiful.
Newspapers and what else? Some plastic,
and
straw. Maybe?
Straw. No plastic.
No plastic.
Anything that composts down, dry leaves, those kinds of things. And then you just put a big, huge, like, you know, maybe 2 feet of compost on top. And then you just plant directly in that. And then over time, that compost and newspaper breaks down and becomes just soil.
Part of the soil, right.
It's really nice.
That sounds
great.
Yeah. Hey, we have to take another break, Novella.
Okay.
Some more farm music here to set the mood, would you, Marcus? Novella Carpenter is with us for the next 20 minutes. If you want to call 410-662-8780, perhaps you've read her book, Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer. Toll-free, long distance, 866-661-9309, Mr. Douglas. Novella, you know, you mentioned your former teacher, Michael Pollan, who was a guest on our show a while ago when he visited Baltimore and also spoke at the Enoch Pratt Free Library, The Omnivore's Dilemma, and In Defense of Food. So he actually teaches journalism at UC Berkeley, right?
Yeah, he does. He actually came into the nursery where I worked when I was doing my urban farming and, you know, being just a scrounger. And I remember being like, wow, Michael Pollan, the guy who wrote Botany of Desire. I love that book. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, I'm here. I teach it at Berkeley at the journalism school. I was like, I had never even heard of something called journalism school. And so I signed up and went.
Back on the urban farm in Oakland, a sign, a handwritten sign, garlic, not onions, ready in July.
Huge
what was
problem.
People see the sprouts as they come up, or whatever, the greens, right?
Yeah. Well,
and
okay.
They think it's onions?
Yeah. Well, here's the deal is that my garden, because it's a squat garden, is open to the public. Anyone can come in and pick stuff. It's fine. I love that. However, there are certain crops where I'm like, no, especially when they pick the garlic too young. I actually was yelling out the window to some lady the other day. She was like harvesting a huge bag of greens. I was psyched. I was like, great, she's going to eat good tonight. And then I saw her go to the garlic and start pulling them up. And I'm like, no, that's garlic.
Has it ever become a problem? I mean, it sounds like you'd like it.
No.
But you also want to eat yourself, right?
I do. But it hasn't become a problem because, I mean, for me, like the woman that's doing the homeless shelter garden is like, people are really hungry and they need fresh produce. There's no access. You know, you can always get some bar or some shake or something. You can always get a food, nutrition, but it's not nutritious. It's not tasty. And so for me to be raising greens for people who are needy without doing it in this way, like, here's some food. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
It's so nice to just be like, hey, the garden's open. Come
right.
by. And I love
that. Do they ever help you?
Most people don't help me. No, not really.
You don't care.
I don't care.
These are unconditional greens.
They're unconditional right? greens. Yes, thank you.
Novella Carpenter, our guest. Farm City, the education of an urban farmer. I need to ask you about the pigs. Before I do, we'll go to the phone lines. Mike in Baltimore, you're on with Novella Carpenter. Hi.
Hey, Dan, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I have a city farm spot over at Druid Hill Park. It's a really great program for the city residents. And I had to wait about a year to get it. And before I got my plot, I had some friends that, you know, were growing stuff in their backyards in Hamden, and they had all kinds of problems with rats getting into their, you know, their strawberries and whatever else they were growing. And so I figured I'd have problems with that. You know, and then my first year, rabbits ate all my beans, and then groundhogs attacked the garden. And, you know, it's something you don't really expect in a city park, but, you know, Druid Hill is a pretty nice park. And I just find it surprising that we had that kind of wildlife right in the middle of the city. And that's pretty much all, you know,
yeah.
I'm curious.
Yeah, I think, you know, you think in the city you'd be protected from that stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Johns Hopkins University Press has a book out on urban carnivores.
Oh, wow.
And we're thinking about having the author on the show at some point here. Yeah, there is a lot of that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, and then you kind of realize that the idea of a city is just a construction. Whatever. We live in a city. There's concrete here. Well, there's still all kinds of animals and critters running around that we don't see until we, you know, start investigating like, whoa, something ate my strawberries.
and their ancestors were here long before ours were, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, with a groundhog, you can humanely trap a groundhog and take him someplace else.
Yeah.
If you think that's the nice thing to do.
Many people do.
Yeah. But then they get disoriented and what?
I know.
Not with their family. They've been separated. They don't know how to get back. They don't have bus fare.
It's terrible. I once took an opossum family for a short journey into suburbia because I caught them in my chicken house. And I didn't kill them this time. I packed them into a car and drove them out. And I just, you know, I thought, well, whatever. I'm just giving somebody else this problem now. But rats.
You trapped a possum, a whole family?
Yeah. It was disgusting. You know, they make, anyway.
And did you put the trap and all in the car?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I took him out.
Was it a small car? So
I had
was
a
it intimate? Were you intimate?
Wait, no, I have a truck, thank God. So they were in the back. They are smelly.
Okay.
But rats, huge issue. Huge issue, especially for urban farmers. And, you know, sometimes urban farmers, if you're not composting correctly, then you'll attract rats even. So it's a huge problem.
What's correct?
Just in a container that they cannot get into, which is pretty much impossible. I mean, rats can get into anything. So I actually stopped food composting at my place because of rats.
So you get it from someplace else?
Well, yeah. We have a municipal program that picks up the green waste and then turns it into compost, and then they give it back to
okay.
To city.
So you found no way to compete with the rats.
Yeah, I think people, if they really, really want to compost, they should use worms. Doing vermiculture is really the way to break down food scraps.
Another call for our guest, Novella Carpenter. This is April. She's in Baltimore. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, Novella. April.
I am, I guess we sort of mentioned just a second ago. I recently moved from Northwest Baltimore to South Baltimore, and we didn't really have a rat problem up there like we do down here. And I've been slightly reluctant to actually start a garden because I don't know what to do or how to go about having a garden, or if rats will actually eat a garden because it's not like fried food and things like that, or... So I was just wondering what you know about rats and gardening in the city.
Yeah, well, what I know about rats in the city is rats live in the city anyway, and because, you know, great, they're a commensal organism that hangs out with humans. And so mostly, yeah, they're eating greasy food. However, if they discover your garden, they're going to eat all the fruit. They're going to eat tomatoes. And what they'll do is they'll just take one bite out of every tomato. It's so annoying. I've noticed, though, that they don't eat any lettuce. They don't eat greens, especially mustard greens. I don't know why. But these are my rats in Oakland that I know so well. So that's kind of their thing. But any grain, like if you grow corn, they're just going to decimate it.
Right.
And I have friends that, you know, what they do is they actually hire a place that will put, you know, they're just like a, you know, like at a restaurant, they have those traps outside, you know, they're baited traps.
The black plastic traps.
She just has some guy come out and do that. And so she doesn't have to really deal with the rats.
Has it helped?
Yeah, and it does help. She doesn't have any rats.
Okay.
And anyone with chickens, raising chickens in the city, will often have rat problems. Same exact thing. They want to eat the chicken food. They love chicken food.
Did you ever run into a problem with city health inspectors?
I haven't. No, there's not. I mean, in terms of what I'm doing, it's not anything that's not above board.
Right.
Yeah.
Including having pigs.
Well. That was fine. That is actually, you know, Oakland has a very lax animal law. So you can basically keep any animal that you want, with the exception of roosters and male goats.
Oh, so the rooster that you had actually...
Oh, that was illegal.
He was not up to code.
He was definitely breaking the code.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the pigs, though, because what stage in this 10-year... Mm-hmm. We're talking about a 10-year period here of gardening in Oakland.
Yeah,
so when did you get the pigs?
The pigs we got relatively recently in the last couple years, and I decided partially because I had been... After raising turkeys, I started to think, man, those turkeys are expensive to feed. You know, they use up a lot of, they eat a lot of feed. And so then you end up with your turkey at the end of, for Thanksgiving, and you spent like $100 feeding the dang thing, right?
$25 a pound.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever. $5 a pound.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, wow, well, what am I doing? I live in the city. What do I know about cities? Well, cities have a lot of waste. And so my boyfriend and I started dumpster diving to feed scraps for our chickens and turkeys. Things like, you know, rice from the Chinese restaurant and bok choy from, you know.
Also from the
Chinese
restaurant.
But yeah. You know, greens. They love it. They love it. So you can really cut your feed costs. And then at that point, we had started keeping rabbits as well. And while Bill and I were visiting the dumpsters, getting a real good sense of them, we would often say to each other, like, you know, we could feed pigs from this dumpster. And so it was kind of a dare, and we did it. We got two Jersey Red pigs and began feeding them dumpster scraps.
How big did Jersey Red pigs get?
Well, I didn't really know, you know, because again, I didn't really research it until I started doing it.
Yeah.
And then I realized they get to like 300 pounds. They can even get bigger than that. They can be
800
pounds. Like if I kept them around for like a year and a half, they would have reached enormous, enormous proportions.
So... You butchered the pigs?
I personally did not kill the pigs.
You had them butchered.
Processed, yes.
Processed,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then we were able to have them butchered by this chef who actually discovered me in a dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
And he offered to teach me how to butcher a pig.
So you may maintain this detachment from these animals. They weren't pets. You were running a little farm.
Yeah. There,
and you wanted to feed yourself and Bill
yeah.
as much as you could, sustain yourself as much as you could.
Exactly.
And can you tell us now, Novella Carpenter, 10 years down the road with this project, in 365 days out of the year, how many of those days do you actually eat something that you grew or raised?
Well, you know, people often ask me that, and
sorry, but I...
No, it's great. It's great because people are like, wow, she grows all of her own food. She doesn't spend a dollar.
I didn't say that. I was just wondering, you know.
Well, you know, that's what I would say too, and that's what I would ask myself.
That was your ambition, wasn't it?
That was my ambition, but then what I realized was the problem with that, I spent one month living just on food that I grew myself. And what I realized is I became very unwilling to share with people. And I kind of had this weird barrier between, you know, it was like I was this freak that was like growing all my own food. I was like, I felt like a survivalist. You know what I mean? And it kind of sucked because no one could relate to me. I didn't want to share my food with them. And, you know, and then I didn't get to eat Chinese food. I mean, why do I live in a city? I live in a city so I can enjoy
all this ethnic food.
All this ethnic food that's around. Right. And share food with my friends and go out. I mean, you know, so it didn't really make sense. And then, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, when the apocalypse comes, I'm going to come over to your house, you know, because you're going to know how to cook, you know, grow food. And I'm just like, what? When the apocalypse comes, we're screwed. I mean, no, what am I going to grow some lettuce?
Eat mustard greens as the apocalypse approaches.
Whatever.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So now things are more in balance, you think,
yes.
after 10 years of this?
Mm-hmm. So I have a more... So what I do now is I'm not sort of growing food for survival mode. I'm growing food that I can grow that's the most delicious. So, for instance, I started raising milk goats, partially because I've found this breed of goat, Nigerian dwarf goats. They're these little mini goats.
Yeah, I've seen them.
Oh, they're so cute. Yeah. And they actually are recognized by the Dairy Association as milk goats. So the milk is so amazing. It's like 8% butter fat. It's like half and half. And I love it. It's just the best thing. So now I just try to grow stuff that just tastes really good, you know, and that I can't actually buy anywhere else. And that's kind of my approach these days.
We've said in jest, I don't know, your neighbors think you're crazy still for doing this, but what's the community like now, all these years later?
It's very, some things have stayed the same. Some people have moved on. The neighborhood's become kind of gentrified. I mean, I start the book by saying I have a farm in the ghetto, and that farm is not in the ghetto anymore. It's become a very kind of, you know, like a place where a lot of artists live and that kind of thing. The one thing that has really remained the same is that there's a Buddhist monastery across the street. And that's what I mean that they think I'm crazy because, you know, for instance, my pigs would escape and then the monks would have to come out and help me like herd the pigs back in because they're from Vietnam and they're used to herding pigs around.
Right.
So things like that would happen.
But they must think you're kind of cool though.
They think I'm kind of
cool. Buddhist monks do their own gardening?
Yeah, but you know, they're vegetarian. You know, it's maybe not totally perfect fit.
Right. And now as you travel around the country talking about your book, talking about these experiences, you find more and more people are eager to get into this?
I am finding that for sure. And I'm meeting so many people that already are involved. So I'm finding my own fellow crazy people who are growing their own food and raising animals.
As I said at one point, I think to a lot of folks, this sounds like a great idea, but they talk themselves out of doing it because they think it's going to keep them at home. They won't be able to travel. They'll have to pull weeds all the time. They're going to fail. Their tomatoes are going to get tomato worms. What do you say to folks who are just, you know, sort of on the fence about jumping into an urban farm?
I mean, I always just tell people to start really small. You know, like, what do you like to eat? You know what I mean? Like
arugula.
You like arugula. It's so easy to grow and so expensive at the farmer's market, but it's a weed. So just get a packet of seeds and start growing something and then, you know, see how that goes and then maybe add the chickens, you know, and learn from other people around you. There's so many knowledgeable people probably in your neighborhood who remember a day back when you could grow your own arugula and keep chickens. Mm-hmm. And so really tap your resources.
Novella Carpenter, Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer, now in softcover, this book. She'll be speaking tonight at 7 p.m. That's in the Wheeler Auditorium at the Enoch Pratt Free Library, her presentation in partnership with Baltimore Greenworks. You can meet her down there tonight. Well, I've really enjoyed this.
It was really fun.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you, Novella. Yeah. Can we hear some more of that funny music?
Oh,
you like the farm music we threw in here? There we go. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
And good luck with your garden.
Thank you.
Your farm.
Thank you.
Your goats. That's our show for today, folks. Thanks to everybody. Novella Carpenter, Diane Ravitch, Buzzy Hedelman, our listeners. The director and engineer of Midday is Marcus Charleston. The show is produced by Vanessa Eskridge and Marcus Charleston. The executive producer is Jeff Brown. We have technical assistance from Ray Heppner. And thanks to Donna's Cafe and Coffee Bars for providing lunch for our guests today. Podcasts of our show stay online for 90 days. You can get them through iTunes, via NPR, or through the WYPR website. Look for me on Facebook. You can be my friend on Facebook. All our listeners are invited to be our friends. This is Dan Rodericks for 88.1 WYPR. Stay tuned for the news, and I'll see you again tomorrow.